Democrats push for gas tax relief. Indiana tax revenues continue to surge, plus a baby formula shortage and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending May 20th, 2022.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, Hoosiers are currently paying almost 75 cents per gallon in state and federal taxes when they get gas. State House Democrats are making a renewed push for Indiana to suspend its gas taxes while prices are the highest they've ever been.
There's a 32-cent state gas tax on every gallon you fill up. Indiana is also one of only about a dozen states that imposes a sales tax on gasoline. That rate is calculated each month based on the statewide average gas price. For May, the rate is about 24 cents per gallon. Democratic Representative Mitch Gore says the governor should call a special session so that lawmakers can pause those taxes through Labor Day.
I think at a time when Hoosier families are feeling pain at the pump, the least we could do is provide some relief by suspending the gas tax.
Most of Indiana's gas tax revenues go to help build and maintain roads and bridges, but Gore says the state can replace the dollars lost during the gas tax suspension with the billions of dollars Indiana has in its budget reserves.
It's sort of unconscionable to not provide some relief for families.
There's also a federal gas tax that's about 18 cents per gallon, which Indiana doesn't control.
Will Republicans suspend gas taxes? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat, Ann Delaney. Republican, Mike O'Brien. John Schwannis, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Nikki Kelly, editor-in-chief of State's Newsroom, Indiana. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, what is the upside for Republicans to resist suspending these taxes?
There isn't one at all, because then the reason for that is this is entirely political. Largely political. How about we be fair and say it's largely political? One, this is a national push by Democrats. We're seeing it in every state, especially the ones that have midterms. There are U.S. senators who are up in swing states that are putting this for moving this forward in Congress. So this is a Democrat kind of campaign playbook nationally, and this is how it's playing out here.
But it does make it a bad idea.
You know, Democrats at the federal idea at the federal level have been pointing to the war in Ukraine. We were well on this path already, with the Biden administration's suspension of federal lease arrangements where they were drilling for oil, suspending Alaska, drilling in Alaska, and trying to tighten this up. So, I mean, the idea that Democrats didn't want high gas as a way to defer people and start moving the markets toward electric cars and away from fossil fuels, this has been part of the climate change playbook forever. So it's playing out. It just so happens to be an election year in Polwell. Now, when you say suspend the gas taxes, that's a number of different things. Like in the report, it's federal taxes, it's the state sales tax, and it's the sales tax on the transaction, right? You can't do anything about the federal. Indiana is one of like very few states that actually completely and holistically and honestly funds roads with the gas tax.
Yep.
We went through a very deliberate process years ago to stop moving dollars away from the gas tax to pay for other tangential things like state police and others, and start kind of honestly drawing a line straight from the pump to the road with that tax dollar. So if you suspend that, even if you do it for 6 months, it's $700-900 million in road funding this year.
Okay,
but I'll finish right here. But I do think there's a legitimate debate to have on a sales tax. Almost no states do that. It just piles on. You're taxing that transaction three different ways. I think we ought to look at that.
Even suspending both the state sales tax on gas and the gas tax for 6 months, I agree with you, the number at 6 months is probably $700-900 million. That's just what we took in April, more than the budget plan expected.
Exactly, which is why it ought to be done. I mean, the Republicans are all big on cutting taxes when it's for businesses or for wealthy. They're not so big for everybody who's suffering. And the reason the price has gone up as dramatically as it is because of the Russian aggression in Ukraine, period. End of discussion.
It's not the only. I'll give you a dollar.
It hasn't jumped like it has in the last 6 months. That is because of the war in the Ukraine. And it seems to me that should be reflected in the Republicans' willingness to say, we had this windfall of cash. We ought to give it back to the people who are suffering at the pump and suspend both the usage tax and the sales tax on gasoline.
And she just pointed out this does help everybody who fills up at the tank. But it does help businesses. In fact, it helps businesses
a lot. And it helps everything, you know. To get any good right now, you're paying for that. And
right, we talked about inflation. Gas prices are part of that,
The main
too.
Thing I'm frustrated is this false equivalency that we're getting, which is if we cut that, we're cutting road funding. We are not.
No.
The point is, the proposal by many Democrats is that we would use that $6 billion surplus to fill in that gap. And it might not even be that full $600-800 million because we've been taking in more than projected for the past 3 months.
Right.
So that would be part of it as well.
I'm going to end with you where I started, which is, is it all downside for Republicans if they continue to resist this? And will it ultimately hurt them? Yes, they are trying to project a lot onto, and some of it very fairly, onto President Biden and his policies.
And that is fair on the why.
Right.
But then the next question
now,
is, how do we help
right,
people?
Are there going to be consequences for Republicans in this state if they continue to resist this?
As I always say, only to the extent that the other side can showcase their reluctance
pretty,
to go along.
But this is a pretty easy one
to
do.
And it is more clear-cut than some. But a lot of times it's the tree falling in the forest. Nobody hears it. But this time, because people are not just hearing it, they're feeling it in their wallets and their purses. But I think we've spent a lot of time talking about this sort of accounting exercise or governmental exercise of, well, the money goes here, this pot of money, this goes here, and philosophical, we don't want to cut that. It really doesn't have anything to do with that. This is all about, you want to make sure, frankly, Hoosiers are suffering now because they're going to blame Joe Biden and a Democratic administration. You know, if you had in Indiana a different situation, you know, with different occupants.
Let me put it to you this way. To that point, if President Trump had been reelected and were still in the White House, would Republicans have already suspended the gas taxes?
Yes.
Yes. I think this. We've gone to a point,
know. This has been in the playbook for like 15 years.
But we don't really debate.
But prices haven't been this high.
Yeah, I just don't think this is about.
It's all relative.
This is about the infliction.
To the highest
this is
ever
the infliction
the
of pain, I think. I mean, we've got midterms coming up. We've got.
Sure.
That's the game
here. That's
why
Pat Bauer was calling for this in 2008.
Remember Mitch McConnell, even back in Barack Obama was elected.
Yeah.
First day, he said our job is, number one job is to make this administration fail.
I disagree with that.
And there's a sentiment about that even in the State House here.
All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question. And this week's question, should Indiana Republicans suspend gas taxes through Labor Day? A yes or B no. Last week we asked you to predict if the General Assembly will make a major investment in public health in the next state budget. Just 12% of you say yes. 88% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Indiana, we were sort of just talking about this. Indiana collected nearly $1 billion more in taxes last month than the state budget projected. With just 2 months left in the current fiscal year, that puts Indiana on pace for budget reserves that could top $6 billion. And April marks the first time ever the state has collected more than $3 billion in taxes in a single month. April's eye-popping revenue collections was led entirely by a huge surge in individual income taxes. In a statement, House Democrats say Indiana is well-positioned for transformational investments in the upcoming budget session next year. The Democrats' fiscal leader, Representative Greg Porter, says Republicans have practiced sheepish frugality. He cites needs for help with gas prices, education investments, and affordable housing. And Delaney, does this show that House Republicans were right about pushing for such a huge tax cut in this past session?
What amazes me about this is, like I said before, they have had such a windfall in this state since the help that the federal government gave and the economy coming back faster than they thought and on and on and on and on. That's exactly why the tax cuts ought to be targeted to the people that are hurting at the pumps. That's exactly why. Because that doesn't tell the whole story. The budget projection was already rosy. And they have squirreled all kinds of pockets of money away in different places to spend at some point in the future. So it is much, much more money than we're talking about, the billion for the month of May. And it's time that they stop acting like they're a bank and start putting it back in the hands of Hoosier voters and Hoosiers who drive cars and are paying exorbitant amounts at the pump. And I don't understand why they don't do it. I really don't.
Whenever you talk to budget writers at the State House, folks like Ryan Mishler and Doc Brown and whoever will replace Doc Brown as Ways and Means Chair, they often say that the hardest part of their job is having to say no to so many people.
Yeah.
How hard is it going to be for them to say no when they're writing a new state budget?
I think it's going to be really hard. And I think I'm not one of these guys that thinks that like the politics of having a surplus are always great. I think we are at a tipping point. There is a tipping point, and I think it's behind us. I'm hearing for the first time ever from like friends and like people that are right leaning but not really political, and they're like, "Can we get some of that money back?" Yeah. You know, like they're not for like going and starting some new social welfare program, whatever, suspending the gas tax or whatever. But they're starting to pay attention to like that's a lot of money sitting there. Now the good news is the last budget session at the end of it, we were debating here and at the State House. What is this revenue real? Now we can kind of say we think it's real. Right? We think it's real.
At least for a while longer.
At least in the window we're in.
Yeah.
The good news is when they put like another $2 billion into K-12 education, they kind of did that with like one eye closed because they weren't sure like in 2 years we're going to have a real hard time. Like we may have a hard time like hitting that start as a starting point, being up $3 billion in one cycle.
Now maybe that's not going to be the problem.
I don't think that's going to be a problem clearly now. But yeah, I think at some point you do get to the point politically where people start going, all right, either like give it back or go do something with it.
Yeah, go do something positive. Right.
Well, to that point, giving it back or go do something with it, is it likely we're going to see both? We've talked a lot about all the things that the governor wants. We've talked about how they're going to continue to push for more tax cuts, particularly the House and the business personal property tax reductions. Is everything now on the table?
That was the argument that Republicans made and sort of what they said to win over, if you will, the governor, who, of course, was sort of a late arrival to the cut tax party. And so that is the mantra. We can do all of these things. We can cut taxes now, and we can still invest in the quality of life issues that the governor has talked so much about, and the private sector has cited recently as being a real problem potentially for recruiting in the state of Indiana. I guess we can do it all. But keep in mind, one reason the revenues have been so robust in the sales tax arena is inflation is great for government coffers. So ironically, you benefit on the backs, basically, of taxpayers who find that they're paying 10, 20% more. Okay. And again, that's at the margin. That's not the major issue, but it is something to consider. And it does make it harder, you're right, for budget architects, and I was going to say Republican budget architects, but that would be redundant because there is no other kind in Indiana. Makes it tougher when they're flush with cash. The best scenario, if you just want a simple existence for them, is look, our cupboards are bare, and we've had that in the past. Don't even come to us because the cupboards are bare, and that makes their jobs easy. This is much tougher, as you suggest.
I was just going to note that what I found interesting in these numbers is it's not the sales tax that's growing.
It's the individual income tax.
It's the only because thing that grew in the last month.
Wages have gone up.
Yeah. Right. And so that's very fascinating is we're not actually seeing it on the sales tax side. And I wonder if we will. I'm not sure.
Well, which is also a harbinger of good, I think, for the future in terms of sustainability.
Right.
Because when it's the sales tax,
except for the fact that most projections call for some sort of recession. I don't know how significant. But
we've had predicted recessions for about 7 years now.
Yeah. And eventually they're right.
We had one. It was about 5 minutes long. And now we're flush with cash again,
yeah.
At least for the short term. President Joe Biden and the U.S. House this week took steps aimed at addressing a nationwide baby formula shortage.
Biden invoked the Defense Production Act to speed production of infant formula and has authorized flights to import supplies from overseas. The order requires suppliers of formula manufacturers to fulfill orders from those companies before other customers. The president is also authorizing the Defense Department to use commercial aircraft to fly formula supplies that meet federal standards from overseas to the U.S. The House passed two bills aimed at the shortage. One, with overwhelmingly bipartisan support, would allow people to use the WIC program to purchase formula from any producer instead of limited to one in the case of supply disruption. The second bill, which almost every Republican opposed, sends money to increase FDA staffing to boost inspections of domestic and international suppliers, prevent fraudulent products from getting onto store shelves, and acquire better data on the marketplace.
John Schwannis. On that second bill, Republicans have said that more FDA staff isn't the problem here. It's not what created this shortage. Will voters accept that explanation?
You always ask the question, will voters, I mean, there's the reality, and then you say, will voters accept it?
Because those are often not the same thing.
They're often not the same. Seldom are they the same thing, actually. And again, it gets back to the ability of one side or the other to frame the debate in a manner that, well, in their mind is accurate, which means translates into compelling and motivational for voters in terms of how deciding how they're going to vote or whether they're going to vote at all. You know, we've seen at the federal government, there has been the slimming down of the federal government has hurt a lot of sectors. And you've seen it with the FAA. They've had, you know, you look at some of the Boeing controversy. They had ceded a lot of their inspection capabilities and so forth to
the companies themselves
out of necessity. You look at the IRS, and nobody's really complaining about fewer audits, but the
problem is the only people who are getting audited are the people who can't afford to get
audited. And there's just, and the IRS is saying, you know, we just don't have anybody. It's not the way it used to be. And in fact, the projections would suggest that one way you want to pump more money into the federal treasury is enforce the tax laws and make sure that people are paying what they should. And then, of course, you get to the issue with the FDA. But again, you could cite almost any sector of the economy and say things don't work as well when you don't have enough people to do enforce policies and conduct the inspections that are expected and required.
There's no guarantee that this bill passes the Senate. The other one may have already. If not, it's going to shortly. So whether or not it passes, though, if the shortage improves, if we start seeing supply back on the shelves, and if the situation gets better, that's all people are going to, at the regular level, that's all they're going to see is the situation is improved. Is this something that Democrats can use against Republicans to say, we improved the situation, and look, they tried to stop us?
Yeah, I don't know, because I haven't seen a really good argument made that directly tied that FDA funding to how it would help the shortage. So, I feel like that one's not going to be hurtful to Republicans, that vote. It just wasn't as clear-cut as, say, the first vote, which was clearly bipartisan.
And we're already, I think, starting to see some of the ripple effects of these actions, at least that the president has taken so far. If this formula shortage does drag on, we've talked about all the things that are hurting Democrats nationally right now and the president, the inflation, gas prices. Is this one that could really hurt in the fall?
Well, I think he's taking pretty aggressive steps, and we do have that plane arriving in Indianapolis from abroad. So he's letting formula from outside the country come, unlike what Donald Trump did with his redone NAFTA, which caused some problems for importing that from Canada and Mexico.
I knew this would be Donald Trump's fault.
Well, in fact, part of it was. But the other part of it, it seems to me, is it's changing the WIC rules is going to make a big difference, since 80% of the formula goes to WIC recipients. That's going to make a huge difference. And it seems to me we need the FDA employees, because we need to take some of the cumbersome regulations for bringing in formula from abroad away, so that we can make sure they're safe, absolutely, but not go through all the rigmarole that foreign importers have to go through in order to bring their product into this country.
So it takes more employees to take regulations away?
I think it takes more employees to simplify the process. Yeah, I do. And we need to simplify the process so that we can bring those in when shortages like this occur. And then we need to manufacture, as we do a lot of things in this country again, to avoid our foreign dependence.
Now you sound like Donald Trump. Now you're channeling Donald Trump.
I'm not channeling Donald Trump, believe me.
If this does drag on, and we hope it doesn't, just because it would be really bad.
If it
does drag on, does this become the defining issue heading into the fall?
I don't think so. I mean, because it doesn't affect the population generally. I mean, it's generally of concern, but it's very much of concern to low-income individuals who have infants on formula, right?
That's what makes it a potent political issue. You know, we were short as a planet of microchips, but, you know, and people grumble and they can't get their cars and this and that. But that's, you can make a commercial about that, but when you have babies, you know, mouths open and they can't get their nutrition.
I did like the...
It's so clear cut. Well,
in the
meantime, I guess you don't want to say they're winners, because I hope this passes quickly, but Dairy Association, you have new guidelines, pediatricians and others who make such recommendations, cutting in half the age at which they say mothers could switch to...
As a last resort.
As a last resort.
Well, I did love, you know... Republicans in Washington this week. There were a couple that said, well, why can't women just go back to breastfeeding? It's like the trillionth chapter in men, how men don't understand how women's bodies work in Washington, D.C. And it was
people would stop
really how it works, fellas.
People would stop using formula.
It's not a spigot you turn on and off. Yeah.
It's all the people using formula in their gas tanks. That would solve the problem.
All right, the state. Oh, this is not a good story. The state, sorry, I just remembered what this story was. The state found harmful PFAS in the treated drinking water at 10 Indiana utilities in its first round of testing. Exposure to these chemicals has been linked to certain cancers, problems with the immune system, and developmental issues in children. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Rebecca Thiel reports, while none of the utilities had PFAS above federal health advisory levels, there's still cause for concern.
Because all of the utilities had PFAS below the federal health advisory level, the state isn't requiring them to take action right now. But the Environmental Protection Agency is expected to set limits for how much PFAS are allowed in drinking water soon. Indiana University professor Lisa Camandula studies the health effects of PFAS and also sits on the EPA's Science Advisory Board for the chemicals. She says those limits could end up being a lot lower than the advisory level.
So other states are being a little bit more aggressive in how they're attacking this problem because they do understand that there are health effects, adverse health consequences from exposure to these chemicals at very low levels.
Most of the utilities that had PFAS in their water were in southern and central Indiana, like Tennyson Water Utility in Warwick County and Danville Water Works in Hendricks County.
Nikki Kelly, how long can Indiana wait to act on this?
Yeah, I don't know. All I know is I didn't know what PFAS was until today, and now I'm scared to death of it because I did a little research, and they call it the forever chemical. Like, they can't break it down, and from what I can tell, it's already there. The concern is, and what no one can agree on, is what level is okay and what level isn't. I mean, there are some recommendations that pretty much if you have anything above one part per trillion, it's horrible. So I would hope that brighter minds than me get together and really come up with a better system for how we should judge this, because it appears that this chemical is in everything that over the years we've used, and it's just leaching into the groundwater. And so I hope we get some clarity on that.
They've been talking at the state level for several years now. The Indiana Chamber of Commerce has played a major role in this and talking about the need for critical water infrastructure improvements in Indiana. We took care of roads and bridges in 2017 with that massive road funding package. But we haven't quite gotten to that level with water infrastructure. Is something like this going to put increased pressure, especially with two topics ago, all of that money they're going to have to play with?
A lot of our challenges as a state, I think, in terms of water infrastructure had to do with the sanitary sewers being linked in some manner to the overflow from heavy rain and so forth. So you had, you know, raw sewage going into places it wasn't designed to, and you have the old aging pipes, you know, which lead and other heavy metals. That's the problem we used to deal with. That's the one we were all familiar with. Then we find out about PFAS. And really, it's not a new problem. Certainly, this is what you may recall. We actually kind of talked about it on the show in a different context with burn pits in the military, and the president mentioned it at the State of the Union because soldiers were being exposed. And we also, this has been an ongoing issue probably, I don't know, for a decade maybe, for firefighters who have said, hey, please, this is a problem. We were getting all kinds of cancers and so forth. The good news is I think I saw a piece, I might have been dreaming this, that there is some technology and that may hold promise. And don't SEC, if I'm wrong, I hope I don't boost the stock improperly, but I think Lilly has some piece of the answer, either as a consortium or something else.
We just talked about sort of in the last discussion a little bit about the potency of an issue. This one feels like, I mean, to Nikki's point, yes, there is disagreement over what constitutes an acceptable level or not, and that will be a debate that plays out both at the federal and I suppose at the state level. But it's really to say, hey, there and. Indiana is doing this testing for a reason. It's not just, oh, by the way, we happen to... There's a purpose behind this. It's really easy to say, hey, there are harmful, dangerous chemicals in our water. We got to do something about it. Is now the time to really, again, as we're talking about ways to use this money, to really start to hone in on water infrastructure?
I think the legislature's already been moving that direction. It's a $12 billion problem that is largely locals' problem. And they do not have
the money for it.
No, and that is traditionally
federal dollars too that have gone for it.
Yeah, and that's been the challenge. But yeah, I mean, we're
but does something like this making the case easier?
I think it does. I think it absolutely does. And you can't ask the locals to absorb this cost. They don't have the resources to do it. We have the resources as a state. We ought to do it before we wind up like Flint, Michigan, with all kinds of kids.
Well, I mean, we've seen a lot of efforts from the State House over lead testing at schools and children, and they're doing a lot more in that realm. And this feels like another step. And we're noticing all these problems. Let's hope we start to...
We spent the whole show spending the surplus, though. I did say that I think it's a political problem, but we spent it about six different ways.
How much does this contribute? How much does the fact that we have so many small utilities around the state to contribute to the problem and dealing with the problem?
And also some of the problem is you need to figure out where it's coming from. There are certain industries that use these chemicals, and then it goes down, you know, downriver.
God forbid we should penalize those industries.
Yeah, that's going to be a harder conversation. That's Indiana Week in Review. For this week, our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of States Newsroom Indiana. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.